So I desire your prayers with this thought this evening. The title of it would be, Are We Working? And I'm going to start off with a little journey into history. So the second temple was destroyed, I think, by Nebuchadnezzar around 586 BC, before Christ. The Israelites were taken captive around that time. And after about 538 BC, Cyrus captured the Babylonians. And after he'd captured Babylon, he granted permission to the Israelites to return and to rebuild the temple. And one of the things interesting in his proclamation is he did say that he would allow those that wanted to go to go. He did say that if there were folks that chose not to go, that they should actually contribute to the work. They should give gold and silver. They should get goods and beasts. They should make sure there was provisions for that. And he advocated that if they wanted to give a free will offering above that, they could. He went and located the vessels that had been taken out of the temple, out of the house of the Lord, gave them back to the folks so they could take them back to properly reinstall them into the temple. And of the folks that are recorded to have left to go back, there were priests, the Levites, some of the people, the singers, the porters, and the temple servants. All of those folks were returning. And what's interesting is if you look at this, everything that they needed was pretty much provided for. It was just time to go and get to work. So they traveled back to Jerusalem, surveyed the situation, and they began working. The first thing they did was rebuild the altar. Seems like a pretty good thing, you know, be able to offer sacrifices to the Lord. Then they started laying out the foundation. And shortly after they started laying out the foundation, things started changing. Difficulties started coming up. Some of the folks in the area began threatening the workers. You know, there was one period of time, I think it's in Nehemiah, it's mentioned, or maybe Ezra, where the people were actually working with the sword in one hand and working to build with the other. That continued for a while. Some of the local leaders started working to disrupt the efforts. And eventually they wrote a letter to one of the kings asking him to send back a command to stop the rebuilding of the city, which he did. Now this rebuilding was estimated to have occurred, or the stoppage in the rebuilding was estimated to have occurred around 529 BC. And from that point on, nothing appears to have happened in regards to rebuilding the temple. About 7 years pass. Darius becomes king in about 522 BC. So now we have a new king, and still 2 more years pass. 2 years that nothing's being done. And then we have a prophecy that's given to Haggai. Haggai chapter 1, starting in verse 1, Haggai 1 and 1, says, In the second year of Darius, the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, This people say the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but have not enough. Ye drink, but are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm, and he that earneth wages to put them into a bag with holes. Thus say the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Go up to the mountain, and bring wood, and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Now one of the things that struck me here, the people had started working. They were rebuilding the temple. They had been provided everything. They needed nothing. And yet, trouble had came against them. Folks had risen up against them. And they had gotten themselves into a place to where the Lord is accusing them of saying, you, the people, are saying the time is not right to build the Lord's house. Notice the Lord didn't say he agreed with them or that they had done wise. He was saying, you have chosen of your own understanding to step back. In one of the commentaries, it says about the folks here, it says, ingenious in excuses, they pretended that the interruption in the work caused by their enemies proved it was not yet the proper time, whereas their real motive was selfish dislike of the trouble, expense, and danger from enemies. And this has me thinking of the works in our personal lives. Do we do this to the Lord in our personal lives? We tend to determine on our own what action is or is not right. We tend to put our own judgment into, is it wiser to move out or more prudent to delay? Do we build the altar in our hearts? We take the central part of the worship and we build it in our hearts and we get it built. But then we don't really move on from there. We start building out other parts of our lives and we never really finish the work that the Lord would like for us to have in the center part of our lives. Notice in Haggai, same chapter 1 and verse 12, then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord. So we see as this prophecy was given out by Haggai, the people responded. They responded to the admonition. They responded to the work. Now we're not going to turn to it, but if we were to turn over to Ezra chapter 5, it talks about that same era. And when they returned to the work, the difficulties returned as well. The local people started trying to raise trouble again to prevent the work. But God didn't allow the people's heart to be turned this time. He kept them on their course. The local governor wrote a letter up to the king, to King Darius, and said, King Darius, the Israelites over here, they're building this city and they're rebellious people and they're going to cause trouble. But they're telling me that Cyrus gave them a command to go build. And, you know, we're writing to you. Can you go search the archives to see if this is true, if what they're saying is true, and then tell us what to do, whether we should stop this people or not. Still didn't seem like a convenient season to work, did it? No different than before. The rulers were still apparently against them, the folks around them against them. But the Lord had said, why was my work stopped? Now, Darius, we have record there, says he investigated the matter. And when he responded to the local leaders, he said, yes, the Israelites are correct. We found it. Cyrus did say that. But he added something to it. He said, by the way, those of you, the governors, you should assist with the effort. You should provide what they need. Help them out. And anyone that doesn't want to help out, anyone that wants to hinder this work, let their house be torn down and take the timbers and build gallows and hang them on it. And in just 4 more years, the temple was completed. Now consider that, 4 years, and yet the work had been delayed for 7 because they'd ran into difficulties, they'd run into obstacles. It wasn't a convenient time. It was more comfortable to not take action and to step back and say, well, the Lord's put a block on this. The Lord's put something in my way. So I'm going to step back. You know, I think about Jesus. Are we about his Father's work? You know, he is a 12-year-old boy in the temple. I need to be about my Father's work. Was it a convenient time for him to begin his work? Not according to his parents. And out of obedience, he returned with his parents home. But have we considered, are we working for the Lord when he wants us to? Let's turn to Numbers. Numbers chapter 33. Numbers 33, starting in verse 51. Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you are passed over Jordan unto the land of Canaan, then shall ye drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their pictures, and destroy all their molten images, and quite pluck down all their high places. And ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land that dwell therein, for I have given you the land to possess it. And ye shall divide the land by lot for an inheritance among your families, and to the more ye shall give more inheritance, and to the fewer ye shall give him less inheritance. Every man's inheritance shall be in the place where his lot falleth. According to the tribes of your fathers ye shall inherit. But if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. So once again, we see here a work given to the Israelites. You're going into the land of Canaan. You need to drive out the inhabitants of the land. And there's a condition attached to it. If you don't, they're going to be a thorn to you. They're going to be a problem to you. Do you know when God gives us a task, if we will listen to him, he will often give us, here's the blessings of what I'm asking you to do. And here's the curse if you don't. It's said in the Bible, you know, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse, life and death. We do well to listen to what the Lord gives us to do, to consider the instructions on how to do it. Think about the Passover of the angel of death when the Israelites were in the land of Egypt still. There were instructions there. There was a work to be done. And if one didn't do the whole work, if one didn't complete everything that had been asked, what was the angel going to do when it came past that house? What if they had killed the lamb, cooked it, had done everything, but not put the blood on the doorpost? Then you have marching around Jericho to overthrow the city. Marching, silent, time after time after time, day after day. And then finally came the time, okay, now, make your sound, shout, let the walls fall down. What about being asked to put the singers out front when you go into battle? These are things the Lord says, I want you to do that. What if those things had not been done accordingly? So, in regards to the inhabitants of the land of Canaan, how did the Lord want the work done? Well, let's look over in Exodus. Exodus chapter 23, starting in verse 28. And I will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, the Hittite, and from before thee. I will not drive them out from before thee in 1 year, lest the land become desolate, and the beast of the field multiply against thee. By little and little I will drive them out from before thee, until thou be increased and inherit the land. And I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even unto the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert under the river, for I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out before thee. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me, for if thou serve their gods, I will surely be a snare unto thee. So we see here there was some instructions. It was going to be a slow work. It wasn't going to be an immediate work. It was not going to be a work of 1 year. They weren't going to go in and just roll through the land and clear all the people out, because God said, I don't want you to be inhabiting dwellings that's been neglected for years. I don't want you to be trying to take over fields that haven't been plowed, that haven't been kept up. So I'm going to leave some of the people here, and as you grow into the land, you need to continue to take over and thoroughly drive these people out. And I will help you. I will use the hornets. I will use other things to help you. And so what happened? Well, we're not going to turn to all these scriptures. We're going to reference three scriptures here. In Joshua 16 and 10, and they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt among the Ephronites unto this day and serve under tribute. Joshua 17:14. And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion in the inheritance? I'm sorry, that's not the correct verse. Judges 1:28. And it came to pass when Israel was strong that they had put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. So what we start seeing is as the people went in to take over the land, they started changing what they were doing. They were given instructions to subdue the people and drive them out. And instead, as they subdued the people, they said, well, we can put them under tribute. We can control them. We can take on the control of them. We're strong. And so how did that work out for them? The penalty for not driving them out was that they would always be a problem for them. If we look at the land of Israel today, isn't there still skirmishes and disputes and people that say, well, we were here before you and you've taken our land? Isn't that still going on today? Is God's word not true? Let's turn now to John. John chapter 4, starting in verse 34. Jesus saith unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. Say not ye, There are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. Here Jesus is mentioning, there had been some discussion with Jesus, or about Jesus and how he was eating. And Jesus mentions that my sustenance comes from doing God's will and finishing the work that he's given me. That, if I do that, I will have everything I need. And he gives a warning. Don't get caught up in saying the work is not yet at hand. You know how many people sometimes, well, yes, it should be time to harvest soon. I'm going to wait another week or two, 4 or 5 weeks. I have a fig tree. I haven't ate very many figs off of it. Had moved it, and it's reestablishing itself. But I went out, had 3 figs on it. Yes, I'm looking forward to those figs. Looking at it's getting close. It's getting close. You know, I waited too long. Somewhere some birds enjoyed some figs. I didn't get to enjoy any of them. I would have been better off if I would have went ahead and picked them, but I was wanting to give them just one more day. But you know, sometimes the harvest is hand. It's the time is now. We can say, well, it would be better if it would, the fruit would taste sweeter if we give it just a little more time, if we give it just a little more. But the devil's out there also looking to say, okay, you're ignoring it. And I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to rob you from your harvest. Let's look at 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 4, starting in verse 1. I charge thee therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. And they shall turn away from their ear, they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that last day, and not to me only, but unto all those, them also that love his appearing. Now this is a good set of instructions when it comes to our work. Starts off, first, keep in mind the appearing, our appearing before the Lord at judgment. That's the very start. Who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom? Paul is reminding Timothy here, Timothy, you've got a work to do. But keep in mind the focus of your work. We all have a life to live, but what is the focus of our life? Is it aimed at that end point? Are we cognizant and aware of the work that the Lord has for us? And then it starts talking about doing our duty, whatever that is. Here it's listed out preaching, reproving, rebuking, exhorting. And it says, do it instantly. My mind thinks about that. Now it says instantly, in season and out of season. And I thought about that. Do it when asked. Not seeking a more convenient time. Being instant, in season or out of season. If the Lord asks you to do something, if he asks you to stand up and testify, stand up and testify. I realize sometimes it may take a moment or two to gather courage, if especially you're a young person moving out like that for the first time. But for us adults, we should be able to stand up and testify. Exhort people. If the Lord lays something on your heart, you know, it is wise to wait for the timing of the Lord, but when the Lord says now, if we continue to wait, it'll be too late. And he also reminds Timothy of the reality. The world, and actually many people who profess Christianity, will not stand for pure doctrine. We see that in our world today. I was reading an article this afternoon that made mention of Christianity's harshness, and the person was talking about a group that was advocating against alternative lifestyles. And they were saying, you know, that this group just holds on to the harsh parts of Christianity, and they were wanting that group to let go of what they perceived as doctrines that shouldn't be held on to. But here, he's being exhorted to endure long suffering, to handle things. Afflictions, it says here, and make full proof of thy ministry. Now, how do you make full proof of your ministry? You have to exercise your calling to its fullest. If somebody says, I felt like I've been called to a gift of helps, of being helpful to people, but then they pass opportunities to help people. There might be questions that come up in people's minds that listen to the testimony and say, well, I saw you pass up somebody that asked you for help and you didn't help then. For a minister, you know, what is your calling? Are you taking your calling seriously? Are you studying to be prepared? Are you being helpful? There are Sunday schools and the teachers. There's just the lay folks in the congregation. Are you living a life that would cause others to want to come to the church with you? That would want to cause them to come and hear the preaching as you're hearing it, to see the impact that it could have on their lives that they see in yours. And then one thing that I really love here is the way Paul ends up with a word of encouragement. A word of encouragement from somebody about to get the final prize. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. And not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Now this could be viewed negatively by some people, because I'm ready to be offered. Paul recognized that my passing won't necessarily be at a good old age, quietly and peacefully surrounded by friends and family in my bed. That's not what I've been called to. It's not part of my work. But it is what I've been asked to handle, what I've been asked to take on, and what the Lord has given me strength for. And because I've been able to stay on the course the Lord gave me, I have a prize that I will obtain. I have ran and ran lawfully. Nobody will be able to say, but he took a shortcut. He didn't complete the full course. Let us keep to the work. And let's look down the road to the day that we'll hear the Lord say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Y'all pray for me.